welcome to Rights Radio, your independent voice. My guest today is Dr. Bill Taylor, a retired Army colonel who was elected to the Infantry Officer
Candidate School
Hall of Fame and former professor at West Point. Dr. Taylor joined CSIS in 1981, that's the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., and served as senior vice president and director of the International Security Program. He taught as an adjunct
professor
at the Georgetown School of Foreign Service and is currently senior advisor at CSIS. Welcome, Bill. So glad to have you with us.
Great to be talking with you again, Joyce.
Bill, I'd like to start with the news in Afghanistan, which doesn't look too optimistic at this moment. How far should we be going in Afghanistan, and what should we be doing in the future?
Well, that's a good place to start. You and I are going to move out into a discussion of Korea. But to get to Korea, we've got to understand that right now we have a lot on our national security plate, and you've hit the one that's the hot button right now. And of course, to discuss Afghanistan, the first thing we have to understand is that it has been a quagmire that has taken down empire after empire, starting with Alexander the Great, moving through the part of the British Empire, moving through the Soviet Empire, and here we are now with Afghanistan. What's different? Well, it's a big debate, and those debating it say, come on, wake up. We've got to be in Afghanistan, a central part of South Asia. This is where Al-Qaeda was born. This is now the home of the guts, the heart of terrorism. And what we've done in Iraq, nice and successful so far, and we've beaten Al-Qaeda in Iraq, now has to be repeated in Afghanistan, which is really the traditional home where Al-Qaeda was born. It's easy to say. Question is, why, when back in 1981, we took on the Taliban in Afghanistan and beat them, we thought, decisively, running off their leader, Mullah Omar, into the foothills somewhere, and we still don't know where he is, but we beat the Taliban. But here we are, all these years later, and the Taliban has come back. It's come back strong, stronger, better funded, better organized, and it is causing, it's created a major counterinsurgency against the government, Karzai, in Afghanistan. And we have been committed, got some of our NATO allies committed with us. It is a counterinsurgency effort that many argue we've got to stay involved in, and we've got to win. Well, those on the other side of that debate would say, please tell me what winning would look like if we ever got there. And what government? Is it the Karzai government? Well, I don't know. That's supposed to be one of the most corrupt governments there is. And they just had a recent election and it's hotly contested. Some would argue that Karzai stole it. It really wasn't a free democratic election. Hold back on things until we work all this out. The debate's on. The Congress is starting to get focused on it. It could become another Vietnam, a very unpopular war that goes down the tubes.
Supporting the effort in Afghanistan are some of the strongest conservatives and people who really know quite well what happened in Vietnam. Surely they must see the dangers.
The debate is there, even among conservatives. You're right. So that when I say there's an enormous debate growing, and you find it in Congress, you find it in academia, in the universities around the country. And I don't think you can paint liberals versus conservatives in this debate. There are different kinds of factions coming at it in different ways. Right now, we've got still classified report coming from the commander, military commander in Afghanistan. We'll see what the Congress in the hearings say about this.
So you have some insight as to what's going to be in that report? A little bit.
I'll tell you. I think it's going to say, we've got to stay the course. We can't achieve our objectives, fight this insurgency, with basically some of the same kind of tactics we used in Iraq with the numbers that we have. We're going to need some additional numbers. Now, there may be a big debate on this in Congress, in the Committee on Foreign Relations and Armed Services Committee hearings, and you may end up finding the commander of all of South Asia coming in for the hearings. And that is my student at West Point, class of 1974, Dave Petraeus. Dave has been very, very quiet the last 2 weeks while Afghanistan's been in the headlines. But when Dave Petraeus testifies, people listen. And by the way, there's still a lot of people trying to put the pressure on Dave to run for president. But he's going to have his own views on this, be drawn into this debate very quickly, I think.
But we also have to talk about life and death. And I think the message that the American people are getting is that our soldiers are taking on missions in Afghanistan that perhaps are not the right missions, or they're not being protected adequately in taking on these missions. It's all very confusing as they're watching it unfold on the television. And heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. That's the most important point. The loss of every man, woman, and child, whether military or civilian, is heartbreaking.
In the debate, an answer to that is, we've been there before.
Yes.
And it was a place called Iraq. And at the time, we were losing terribly. And the papers were carrying these constant increases in deaths and people being maimed. But guess what? You got a guy named David Petraeus with a new strategy, which he and special staff he created developed. And that counterinsurgency strategy worked. We won't apply it exactly the same way in Afghanistan, but we'll take all the lessons learned from the success in Iraq and apply them to a different situation. It's possible to carry the debate that way.
Is that what we're seeing now? Are they taking the lessons learned in Iraq? Are they applying them today in Afghanistan?
We're just walking up to such matters as getting the leaders of the provinces in Afghanistan working with us down at the village provincial level. We didn't do that in Iraq until the last year and a half, when we got the Sunnis working with us in the villages and provinces, and we moved that way to get their government in control, to help their local businesses get back in operation. That's what we've got to do in Afghanistan, and we haven't had enough time with this new counterinsurgent strategy to work. But it can work. I think it's one of those situations where we work with whatever allies we can get, and as long as we've got allies who will commit their men and women to fighting that insurgency, who will commit the funds, their fair share of the funds, that we do what we can to check the Al-Qaeda and to prevent Afghanistan from going totally under the control of Taliban. In other words, move to an Iraq that can find fairly elected representatives and which can control their own country. Probably isn't going to end up being a perfect democracy, but get it out of the situation it's been in with the Taliban.
It's a tall order, isn't it?
And everything I just said,
yeah.
I'd give you the next 2 minutes, I'm totally against what I said.
Really?
Sure, it's up for debate.
Okay.
And don't forget, at West Point, I was an additional duty. I was director of debates. He's saying, you know this, are debatable.
But someone better have a good conclusion on this one, or we're going to be in huge trouble. If we should get out, then we should start thinking about that now, not wait 2 or 3 years.
Yep, well, just wait till Dave Petraeus, the military commander. Remember, that people should remember the military chain of command. It is from the president through the Secretary of Defense, Gates, through David Petraeus, the commander of the Central Command, which has all of South Asia in it. Admiral Mullen, who's been talking and talking and talking about Afghanistan the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's not even in the chain of command. He's chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Think about that. Wait till Dave Petraeus gets in this good debate. When? Next week? Week after? We'll see.
All right, we're going to be ahead of the news with this interview.
I think so.
All right. Well, you've written not one, but so many books. Revision, American National Security, Policy and Process. Your co-author is Dr. Joe Jordan. That brings us to North Korea. Where do you think we're going with North Korea?
While all the news is Afghanistan, a lot is going on of great importance to U.S. national security in Northeast Asia. Mainly focused on North Korea, and mainly on North Korea's nuclear capabilities. A couple of days ago, the leadership in North Korea made it known that they are moving toward a new method of reprocessing uranium to make nuclear devices. So far, over the last few years, they developed plutonium to the point where they have an estimated 8 to 10 plutonium-based nuclear weapons. They've tested two, one failed, one was a semi-success. But the big question is, do they have the capability to mount these nuclear weapons and deliver them by missile, by cannon, by aircraft, whatever? And that is a big debate. But the point is, North Korea is continuing to move in the nuclear weapons area. And that has been seen as a serious threat by the United States, by a number of powers who have joined something called the Six-Party Talks, that is about North Korea's nuclear weapons, trying to get North Korea involved and to find a solution to their nuclear capabilities. And the Six-Party Talks have been on again, off again. The North Korean government is rather unpredictable in its approach to these and other strategic matters. And we've really not gotten anywhere. The North Koreans are testing missiles all the time, some medium range, some long range. They're trying to get one, a missile that will reach the continental United States. They've tried that twice, and both times the missiles failed. But they're continuing to modify those missiles and upgrade them. So we've got to pay attention to the nuclear threat in North Korea. Well, what does that mean? Pay attention to stop them from developing nuclear weapons, which are threatening to us, to our Japanese and Korean allies and others. Why don't we just tell them to stop it? What power do we have behind that statement to tell them to get out of the nuclear business? Very, very little. North Korea has a very large conventional military force, 1.1 million, lots of tanks, armored personnel carriers, aircraft, missiles, and so on. If there were a war, should war break out between North Korea and South Korea and the U.S. ally, we would obliterate North Korea in 6 months or less of medium to high intensity conflict. I can explain what that means.
Please do.
All right. Well, I mean, using our Air Force, our navies, our mechanized forces, etc., we have 26,500 U.S. soldiers on the ground in South Korea. Using that and with our allies, we can kill, destroy North Korea's military forces. There's just no doubt about that. But in the process, we meaning the United States, its ally in South Korea, its allies in Japan, all the American civilians, businesswomen and businessmen and spouses and business, you know, that are in Japan and South Korea, we would take hundreds of thousands of casualties inflicted by the North Koreans, which have, for example, 10,000 pieces of artillery estimated along a demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, which, when fired in a few hours, could obliterate the capital of South Korea, Seoul. What is Seoul? It's roughly 16 million people, depending on what geographic boundaries you're looking at, and it would incinerate them overnight. Mm-hmm. North Korean missiles, some of them, would get to Japan. And we do not have the missile defenses to stop all that. So I'm saying we win, but we take so many casualties, it is a Pyrrhic victory. The old in effect loss. Pyrrhic victory. So we've got to find another way to stop North Korea, get them out of the nuclear business. Well, this sounds, what I'm about to say, makes conservatives, at least neoconservatives, laugh. And that is, talk the North Koreans out of their nuclear weapons, deal with the North Koreans to get rid of their nuclear weapons.
This is Dr. Joyce Starr. Stay tuned for part two of my interview with Colonel Bill Taylor. Bye-bye.